Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 11 lines from the top of Daf Yud Gimel. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we take a look at the Mishnah back on Daf Yud Aleph Omid Beis. If you have that available, then you can look there. If not, then we'll just mention that there had been a number of deos mentioning what is necessary for allowing a movui to be an area that one can carry in. The second opinion there was stated as follows. It was Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Omar Talmud Echad. In the name of Rabbi Shmuel, a Talmud said, Lifnei Rabbi Akiva, presented Rabbi Shmuel's opinion to Rabbi Akiva. This Gemara that we're opening with deals with the historical aspect or the names that are associated with that particular presentation. So we open up the Gemara, and you'll notice there's a long point that with which we open the Gemara. The Nun that you see encircled is a Nekuda, a point. Following the long point, after the Gemara makes its point, the Gemara is going to raise a question. And you'll notice that the question itself is rather long. So that now that the structure more or less is laid out, let's turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Kol mokom shata motzei. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Omar Talmud Echad Lifnei Rabbi Akiva. Whenever you see that setup, that is what we saw in the Mishnah, that in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, a certain student presented his information in front of Rabbi Akiva. Einu Elo Rabbi Meir Shishimesh Es Rabbi Shmuel Es Rabbi Akiva. It's a reference to Rabbi Meir. Now the word Shishimesh literally means that served, but throughout the Shas, when you see the word Shimesh, you'll see the expression Shimesh Tamidei Chachamim. It's a reference to someone who learned by them. He learned their Torah. So we now know that the speaker in the Mishnah that was presenting Rabbi Shmuel's halacha to Rabbi Akiva, it was Rabbi Meir. Desanya, Omar, Rabbi Meir. We have this Tanaic source in which you see the names appearing. Rabbi Meir says, Kishoisi Eitzel Rabbi Shmuel, when I was by Rabbi Shmuel, Hoisi Matil Kan Toim Lusoy Chadioi V'lo Omar Li Dovar. I, Rabbi Meir tells us, was a scribe, was a soifer, and the ink, the dio that I used, I had put into it a substance called kantoim. This is a substance that makes the ink indelible. I did that. I used to add kantoim to the ink, and Rabbi Shmuel didn't tell me anything, didn't object to it. Kishibosi Eitzel Rabbi Akiva, Osro Olai. And when I came to Rabbi Akiva, after I was learning by Rabbi Shmuel, then continued my learning by Rabbi Akiva, he forbade it. On the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading. Rabbi Meir, the topic is entitled the Nosei, and there we have written, Rabbi Meir Eitzel Mi Lomad, by whom did Rabbi Meir learn? And he hoya sofer vishtam ishbe kankantum. He was a scribe and used kankantum. You noticed already a marking, the diamond. This diamond is used to highlight here the word osra. Later, we will see the diamond used again, but for our purposes, we're going to be focusing on who is associated with the osra. The first diamond you see is associated with Rabbi Akiva. He forbade the use of the kankantum. Later, we'll see Rabbi Shmuel is referenced to in the second diamond, and he is the one that seems to assert the use of the kankantum, this chemical that makes the ink indelible. as far as why that may be, that too will be, that will come out in the Gemara's discussion. The Gemara opens up right now with a question. We pointed out this is a long question, and it's actually a two-part question. The first question, the first issue is, by whom did Rebbe Meir really start his learning? The source we read would have indicated that he started his learning by Rebbe Yishmael, and then transferred to Rebbe Akiva. In the presentation that we will see in the question, the opposite will become apparent, that he started his learning by Rebbe Akiva, and then went to Rebbe Yishmael. In fact, even before we read the Gemara, notice in our source that we just read, there's a squiggle underline, Kishibosi. And that means when I came afterwards, I came to Rebbe Akiva. That means he started with Rebbe Yishmael, whose name we dashed underlined, and then he came to Rebbe Akiva. In this long question, you will notice a Rebbe Akiva's name is dashed underlined, and then the next line you see in the middle of the line is squiggle underlined, Ukshibasi, Itzel, Rebbe Yishmael. So the order of events would seem to be the opposite. So that's going to be one point of difficulty for us. And the second point, as we made already, who is the one that really forbade the use of the kankanto? Now, let's read this in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? In other words, is that which we taught in this Tanaic source accurate? The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rebbe Meir. The following story was reported by Rebbe Yehuda in the name of Rebbe Meir. Kishoisi Loimed Eitzel Rebbe Kiva, when I, Rebbe Meir, used to learn by Rebbe Kiva, Hoisi Matil Kantantom Lesochadio Velomer Lidovar. I added Kantantom to the ink and he didn't say anything. Ukshebosi Eitzel Rebbe Yishmael Omar Li, and when I came to Rebbe Yishmael, he said to me, Bini Mamalachtecho, what is your occupation? Omar Tilo Lablor Ani. I am a scribe. I am a soifer. Omar li, bini, heve, zohir, b'mlachtecho, shemlachtecho, mleches shemayim hi. Be very careful with your occupation. Your occupation is of a divine and heavenly nature. Shemo ato mechaser ois achas, o miaser ois achas. You could skip a letter. Mechaser from where choser means absent or missing. You can miss a letter. Or miaser from where yoser means add a letter. Nimseis machriv es kol ho'ilom kulo. And that type of mistake could result in the destruction of the world. It could be a hideous error. Omarti lo dovor echod yesh li v'kankantam shmo. So I told him, says Rebbe Meir, that I have a substance, and the substance is kankantom, shani matil l'sochadyo, and I add it to the ink, making it indelible. Omar li v'chi matilin kankantom l'sochadyo. Is that really allowed? V'halo omro toiro v'chosav u'mocho. The posuk says in Parsha Sota, Parsha Sota is found in Bamidbar Perakei, Parshas Noso. It concerns a woman who behaved immorally, and there is a procedure that she must follow in order to establish whether or not she was actually, if there's a doubt, whether she went all the way in her questionable morality, and she's brought to the Beis HaMikdash. a Parsha is a section of the Torah is written out. And then, umocha, that's v'kosav, means it's written out, a section of those written out, and then it's erased over some water which she has to drink. Of course, Maseches Sota is the tractate that deals with the details of that entire process, but our purpose right now is just to note that there is a writing and an erasing. And we learn from this, from these psukim, v'kosav, umocha, ksav, shiyochol, limchois. It has to be a type of writing that is subject to erasure. And if you're adding kankantom, so that is going to interfere with the erasure possibility. You notice that we have a bracketed section. This is for the purpose of making it clear, we'll say, that the section within this brackets tries to clarify the give and take we just read. However, after we clarify the give and take, the basic question material has already been said, and the Gemara is going to highlight that after the brackets. So, assuming for the time being that we understood the story, namely Rabbi Meir tells us he started learning by Rabbi Akiva, he then came to Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel heard about his occupation, and he told him, you can't use the kankantom. Skipping the bracketed section, you can see the length of the brackets by the bracket length indicator, vertical dash dotted line. So you skip to the end of that, and notice the double underline is used to highlight the problems. Kashya shimush ashimush, kashya osra aosra. We now have a problem. Shimush, as we said, learns. By whom did he learn first? In the source above, it seemed he learned first by Rabbi Shmuel. In the story that Rabbi Yehuda told us about Rabbi Meir, it seems that he learned first by Rabbi Akiva. Kashya osra aosra. There is also a problem here in who is the one that forbade the use of the kankantom. In the source, we have the diamond, and that's associated with Rabbi Akiva. And in the story, we have the diamond, and we had written in above that Rabbi Yishmael is the one that questioned. In other words, he forbade the use of the kankantom. The Gemara will continue pointing out that the issue of the shimush is the by whom he learned first. We can resolve that. However, the issue of the one who assert it, of the kankan, that will remain a difficulty. Let us now go to the bracketed section and continue from that point. We have just seen that Rabbi Shmuel told Rabbi Meir, don't use the kankantom. But that came on the heels of Rabbi Meir telling him that I am a scribe. Rabbi Shmuel said, well, you have a very holy occupation, you have to be very careful. And then Rabbi Shmuel says, after Rabbi Meir hears that he has to be very careful, he then says, well, I add this chemical making the ink indelible. How is that a response to the fact that his occupation is one that requires a great deal of care? Before we actually learn the brackets, I just reminded myself that we should read the Rashi. There's a Rashi in the upper third of the Rashi commentary. Mechaser oisachas. Rabbi Shmuel had told Rabbi Meir, you know, your occupation as a scribe is almost a dangerous occupation. It's a delicate operation where you could you could wreak great havoc. How's that? Mechaser oisachas. You might skip a letter. There's a pasuk that says Vashem Elokim Emes. Im mechaser aleph. If you take the aleph, if you skip in your writing of that pasuk, you write it without the aleph. Hare atom machriv. You are writing something of a blasphemous nature, because you'd have the word mace, and you'd be saying something that's of a blasphemous nature, that the Almighty, and then you'd have the word following that, the word mace. So be very careful. And another point, Vayedaber Hashem, im toisif ois achas, v'tifto vayedabru, the word Vayedaber means, and the Almighty spoke. That's in the singular, which is naturally the correct form. But if you add to the word Vayedaber a vav, mistakenly, you're making it plural, nimtzeis machriv, again, a blasphemous statement. So in the story, we saw Rabbi Yishmael pointing out how delicate the occupation of a scribe is. And then Rabbi Meir says, well, I have a kankantom that I add, making the ink indelible. How is that a response, or what's the connection between Rabbi Yishmael telling him to be very careful, and then Rabbi Meir's response, I have this indelible substance? The Gemara in the brackets, my ko'omar lei, umay ko'mahader lei. What was said, and what is the nature of the response? Hochi ko'omar lei. Thusly, Rabbi Meir was saying to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael had told him that your profession is one that requires great accuracy and diligence. So Rabbi Meir says, Lo mi bayo b'chaseros yviseros delo to'ino de boki ano. You don't have to worry about my missing or adding letters. I am a boki. I am an expert. I don't make mistakes of that nature. Elo afilu mechash lezvuv nami dilma osi v'yosiv atage de David. But even something like after a word is written with ink, it's fresh ink, it's still wet, you could imagine a fly coming along, a zvuv coming along, and sitting on the wet ink, and v'yosiv atage de dalet, the dalet, the letter dalet is made of two lines, one vertical and one horizontal. The horizontal line of the dalet is not positioned at the very edge of the vertical line, but it's moved in a bit, creating the horizontal line is pushed, we'll say, back to the right a little bit, creating a little protrusion, making it distinct from another letter that doesn't have that protrusion, namely a resh. So that protrusion of the dalet in the upper right hand corner of the letter was called the tage. The tag of the dalet protruding makes it clearly a dalet as opposed to a resh. So imagine a fly landing on the wet ink. Umochik le means an erasing that little protrusion, the ink getting stuck to the legs of the fly. Umashvile resh, and making the dalet into a resh. And we say, in the pasuk we say, for example, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echod. The Almighty is singular, is one. If you were to, if that dalet would become a resh, it would result in something of a blasphemous nature. Again, acher might mean instead of echod, you have the word acher, meaning a stranger, a different one, something blasphemous. If you put it into the context of the pasuk, so Rabbi Meir says, you know, as far as what you said, I might miss or add letters. Don't worry about that. But something like this, which you might think is something to be of concern. So, Dovor Echod Yeshli, Rabbi Meir continues to tell him, I have a chemical. The Kankantom Shmo, its name is Kankantom, Shani Mati Lusochadio, that I add to the ink. So that as soon as the ink hits the paper, it leaves its mark. And even if a fly were to land there, the Dalet would remain a Dalet. So with that, we understand what the give and take that took, what was the meaning of the give and take that took place between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shmuel. That having been said, we continue in the Gemara, Kashya Shimush HaShimush, Kashya Osra Osra. As we pointed out before, these are two problems. The Gemara says, Bishlamo Shimush HaShimush Lo Kashya, as far as the order by whom he, Rabbi Meir, had learned, is not a problem. It's actually several stages. Meikor Osilikame Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Meir started out his Torah learning career, if you will, by Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabbi Akiva was a scholar whose learning was characterized by very, very deep analysis. Analysis of Torah requires prior knowledge of what we would call primary sources. Knowledge of, in our terms, primary sources would be the Torah, the Tanakh, and the Mishnayos, and the explanation of the Mishnayos, being a corpus of literature that precedes the Talmud. And only once one is expert in, or let's say, to put it more mildly, he's very familiar with the Mishnayos and its explanation, then one can engage in a deeper analytical type study. So Rabbi Meir, and by the way, we're going to have to wait till Daf Yud Gimel to see exactly what Rabbi Meir's intellectual capabilities were to, let's say, not preempt the Gemara, but to present the Gemara earlier that will appear later. Right now, suffice it to say that Rabbi Meir, as he developed, he ended up being a mind that superseded the rest of his generation. He was a man of extraordinarily intellectual capabilities. That we see later on. But in this particular stage, he started his learning by Rabbi Akiva, and it says, Umidolomotzi lemeitem alibei. Rabbi Meir was not able to understand Rabbi Akiva. He wasn't able to follow his his analysis, his Torah lectures. So what did Rabbi Meir do? He left. You don't continue learning in an environment that you don't understand what's being said. Also, lekame to Rabbi Shmuel, he then went to Rabbi Shmuel, the Gomar Gemara. Rashi says, Gomar Gemara, Mishnayis, Shekibel Miraboisov. He then learned the primary literature that we just mentioned. The Mishnayis are that which we're familiar with, the Mishnayis, and their explanation. The basic pshat, as we call it, which, by the way, is what when you learn Gemara on a we'll call it a superficial basis, similar to maybe what our Daf Yomi Gemara markings Shirim are, we're in effect learning Mishnayis with their proper, with their explanation, with the Gemara explanation of the Mishnayis. So that is what Rabbi Meir did. He realized that he was lacking all of the primary literature, and hence was unable to follow Rabbi Akiva's lectures. He then went to Rabbi Shmuel and made up for lost time, so to speak. He made up he covered the learning that was necessary. The Hodar also lekamei to Rabbi Akiva. The Sovar Svara, and then he went back to Rabbi Akiva and understood and was able to analyze along with Rabbi Akiva. This idea you see repeated in many places throughout the Shas. The Gemara in Tainis, for example, says that if you see a student who's having difficulty in his learning, it's because of the Mishnayis that he is lacking. And as we said, the Mishnayis is a reference to the primary literature necessary before one can understand the deep analysis that is characteristic of true, deep Torah learning. And you find in Maseches Brochus, Haskesu Shema Yisrael, and Daf Samach Gimel, that one first has to absorb the information, the primary information, and then proceed to analysis afterwards. And you find in Shabbos Daf Samach Gimel as well. You find Rav Kahana, it points out that first you have to learn all of the primary literature, the all of the Mishnayis with its explanation. You can call this learn through all of the Shas with its simple explanation, and then engage in deep analysis, so that one form of learning is complementary to the next form of learning. You need to have a great exposure to the primary literature, and then engage in the analysis. And you see, that is exactly what happened with Rabbi Meir. And if one switches the order and then finds that he is having difficulty, he should know right away what the first reason, the primary reason for one's difficulty that many people experience in their Torah learning is because they're lacking the basic information, the basic sources. And you find in Maseches Sota Daf Mem Dalet, find in Maseches Zvochem Daf Tzadivov, and many other places throughout the Shas that make very clear reference to the how one is supposed to go about learning. There is an order, there is a method, and there is certainly no better source than what I like to refer to as the manufacturer's instructions. The Shas itself contains the method how one is to go about achieving excellence and pleasure from his Torah learning. So as far as the sources by whom did Rebbe Meir start learning. So if you see a source that says, when I started my learning by Rebbe Akiva, that's a reference to stage one, originally when he was by Rebbe Akiva, and then he went to Rebbe Shmuel. If you see a source that says, I started by Rebbe Shmuel and then went to Rebbe Akiva, that was stage two. That was the middle stage where he had gone to he had left Rebbe Akiva, gone to Rebbe Shmuel, and then after Rebbe Shmuel, then went back to Rebbe Akiva. So as far as that seeming inconsistency, we've resolved it. The Gemara goes on to say, Ela Osra, Osra Kasha, but who is the one that actually issued the legal ruling about Kankantum, that one should not use it? That is unclear. That seems to be on the... In the first instance, we saw Rabbi Kiva is the one that answered it, and then the long question seems that Rabbi Shmuel is the one that answered it. So who actually answered it? Kasha. That remains a difficulty. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a new marking. We see a bow tie shape, and under our Mivneh heading, you notice... We feature the bow tie, and we've written Shnei Brisos Benosei Mechikas Parsha Sota. We'll see two sources that deal with the erasure of that Torah section called Parsha Sota that we alluded to earlier. By way of general structure, there are, in these two sources, each source has two Tanaic opinions. There is a Tanakama and a second opinion. There will be an attempt on the part of the Gemara, and we will be illustrating that through the triangles that you see. The triangles will appear in two different directions. The initial attempt of the Gemara will be to parallel the two Tanaic sources. Namely, the two opinions in source number one have their parallels in source number two. Not necessarily in that order. In other words, the first opinion of source one, we're going to see, will parallel, the Gemara will attempt to align that with one of the two opinions in source number two. So, in effect, we've got four names, four Tanoim reflected between these two sources, and our initial job is going to be to try to line up two and two. The Gemara then, with namely Rav Popo and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, you can see their names are featured in triangles, inverted triangles. The Gemara there, Rav Popo and Rav Nachman, will undo what the Gemara tries to do in its attempt to parallel. So let's continue now in the Gemara. First, let's learn the source. Source number one, Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Meir Hoya Omer, Lakoma Tilin Kankantom, Lutocha Dio, Chutz Miparshus Soita. That when you are writing anything, you can add the Kankantom chemical, making the ink indelible, with the exception of Parshas Sota, which is a section in Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Hay. That section called Parshas Sota, even in a regular Sefer Torah, don't add the Kankantum. Why not? So we wrote in between the lines, Afilu B'Sefer Torah, that means Parshas Sota, in a regular Sefer Torah, this is a position meaning in addition to the Beis HaMikdash special writing that when a Sota woman would come into the Beis HaMikdash and she had to undergo the Sota ritual, a special section was written. Rabbi Meir says not only that special section, that special document that's written in the Beis HaMikdash, but in any Sefer Torah, in any shul, when it is being written and you get to Parshas Sota in Bamidbar, Perakei, don't add the Kankantum. Why is that? So it would appear that we want to leave the possibility of that section to be used in the Beis HaMikdash so that you could in theory use as the sota ritual any sacred Torah, not only writing a special document for the sota, but pull a sacred Torah out of any Aron Kodesh in a shul, from a shul, bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and erase that section as part of the sota ritual. So it's understandable if that is an option, so don't add the kankantum, which would prevent me from being able to erase. Rabbi Yankiv Omer Mishmo, Rabbi Yankiv says in his name, Chutz miparsha soita shebemikdash, that what Rabbi Meir is objecting to is not the adding of kankantum to every sefer Torah, but it's the addition of the kankantum to the document prepared for the sota in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the document written for every sota, but a sefer Torah that you write for a shul, you can add the kankantum to the entire sefer Torah ink. You don't erase from a sefer Torah. My Binayu, the Gemara asks, what's the practical difference between these two opinions? Well, we've already spelled it out, but here the Gemara is asking, what's the difference? Omar of Yirmiya, Limchuk lo min haTorah ika Binayu. Can you use a sefer Torah from a shul, from a personal sefer Torah, meaning any sefer Torah, can you use it for the sota case that would appear in the Beis HaMikdash? According to the Tanna Kamma, yes, you can use a shul sefer Torah. According to Rabbi Yankiv, no, you don't erase from a sefer Torah. The only time you erase is after you prepare a special sota document in the Beis HaMikdash. That is the only thing that one can erase for the sota. No, you don't have the sefer Torah option. Hopefully, these two opinions are very clear. That enables us to go on with the Gemara, Vahani Tanoi Kihani Tanoi, and now we will see two more Tanoim in this second source that will parallel. Our initial job will see who parallels whom. Don't be fooled by the order of the names. So let's see. The Sanya. The first opinion says, Ein Megilasa Kshera Lahashkois Ba Soita Acheres. Let us say a woman came to the Beis HaMikdash and needed, she had to undergo the sota ritual. In other words, this was a woman who was suspect of conducting herself immorally. In order to test her out, so to speak, she goes through the sota process. So the Megillosa is the special sota document that was prepared for lady number one. That cannot be used for a second lady if a second soto case would come. Why is that? Well, it's because we require lishma. We require it to be done for her specifically. Lishma means literally in her name, meaning or for her purpose, her meaning specific woman. As a result, do you think you'd be able to erase from a shul sefer Torah? No, you'd say you wouldn't be able to, according to this opinion. Why? Because the shul sefer Torah was not written for a specific woman. So, which opinion in the previous source said you cannot use a shul sefer Torah? It was the Rabbi Yankiv opinion, the second opinion in the previous source. So at this point, we want to say that the opinion number one in source two parallels opinion number two in source one. Let's continue. Rav Achi bar Yoshi Omar, Megilasa Kshera Lahashkes Bo Soita Acheres. A sota document written for lady number one could be used for lady number two. This would indicate that Rav Achi does not insist on it being lishma, that it being written specifically for this woman, In other words, if it's, even though it's written with woman number one in mind, it could be used for woman number two. If that's the case, that you don't need to have lishma, then you would be able to use the Parsha Sota written for a shul Sefer Torah. It wasn't written for any woman in mind. You could use it for the Sota ritual. Who in Source 1 would have said that? That you can use a Sefer Torah as well for the Sota ritual? That was opinion number 1 in Source 1. So what we see here is that opinion 2 in Source 2 parallels opinion 1 in Source 1. As the Gemara continues, we will see Rav Papa and Rav Nachman Yitzchok challenging the parallels we just made. Omar Rav Papa, Dilma Lohi, maybe it is not so. Ad kan lo ko'omar tanakama hosam, that means the first opinion in Source 2 that insisted on lishma, he said that elokevon de intik lishum rochel su lo hajramintika lishum leo. The tanakama isn't necessarily, this Tanakam in Source 2 is not necessarily preoccupied with the necessity of it being written with a specific woman in mind. However, he's saying post facto, if it was written for a specific woman, in other words, it was intik, means it was, literally it means it was taken away, it was yanked away from everybody else, so to speak. It means it was reserved, specified for one woman. Once that happened, once it was specified for a specific woman in mind, you can't now use it for someone else. Let's read that line again. Kevon te'intik l'shum Rachel, since it was prepared and reserved with a very specific woman in mind, for Rachel being a generic term for a specific woman, sulo hadramintika l'shum Lea, it cannot now be removed from Rachel to be used for Lea. That is what the first opinion in source number 2 was concerned about. However, as far as an initial writing, the initial writing of it, to have a specific woman in mind, that's not necessarily so. You don't have to have that. Avogabi Torah, destamo mirtava, a sefer Torah that's prepared for a shul that wasn't written with a specific woman in mind. Hachinami demachkinon. Opinion number 1 in source number 2 could very well see that as a possibility of using a safer shul safer Torah, being that it wasn't reserved for a specific woman. When the time comes and you need to use to prepare, or a sota case comes to the Beis HaMikdash, you can use the safer Torah from the shul, open it to Bamidbar Perakei, and erase that section. Oh, so at this point then we're saying, this is what Rav Papa is maintaining, that opinion 1 of source number 2 can parallel opinion number 1 of source number 1. That is not like what the Gemara tried to do initially, where we had our first triangle with the point up going. He wanted to say that opinion number 1 of source 1 was connected to opinion number 2 of source 2. Here you see Rav Papa is saying otherwise. Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Rav Nachman Yitzchok looks at the other opinion, the other two opinions. Dilma Lohi, once again, he says, not like was said by the Gemara with the triangle point facing up. Ad kan lo ko'omar Rav Achi bar Yoshia hosam. Rav Achi appeared to be an opinion. He was the second opinion in source number 2. He seemed to be of the opinion that you don't need to have lishma. And as a result of that, we thought that opinion number 2 of source 2, Rav Achi, would parallel opinion number 1 of source 1. Here, Rav Nachman says, not so. Not so at all. It could be that Rav Achi, that seemed to be not insisting on Lishma, he says, Hosom elo de ichtiv mias lishum sota b'olam. Rav Achi was describing a case where you have a parsha that was written in the Beis HaMikdash with the exclusive intention of it being used for a sota ritual. Once it's written with a sota ritual in mind, as opposed to the writing of a Sefer Torah, which is not written for a sota ritual, it's written for reading or for learning purposes. What Rav Achi is really saying is that once it's written for a sota, that's what the Gemara said, the ichtiv mihas l'shum sota b'olam, was written for a sota, then I don't care if it was written for Rochel and then you're going to use it for Leah. The reason that he's not concerned is because the initial writing was with the specified sota purpose. Avol gabi Torah de l'islami ksiva, but a sefer Torah, a Torah scroll that's l'islami, means it's used for learning, for the public Torah readings or for learning from it. It's not written for a sota ritual. It's written for another purpose altogether. Hachi nami delo machkinan. I wouldn't be allowed to erase from that. I wouldn't be allowed to use a sefer Torah. So, in source number one, did you see an opinion that said you're not allowed to use a sefer Torah? Yes, Rabbi Yankiv in source one said, he in effect said that. He said that as far as the indelible material that could be added to a sefer Torah in the that's in a shul, because you don't erase from a sefer Torah. According to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, who is saying that in source number two? That is Rav Achi Bar Yoshia. So according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, opinion number two in source two parallels opinion number two in source one. So that what we, if we just review these approaches, the Gemara thought when the Gemara said Vahani Tanoi Ki Hani Tanoi with the triangle point facing up, at that point the Gemara tried to parallel opinion one of source one with opinion number two of source two. Rav Popo said, not so. It could very well be that opinion number two of source two, or let's say, Rav Popo would say opinion number one of source two aligns with opinion number one of source one. Likewise, Rav Nachman says opinion number two of source two would align with opinion number two of source number one. So being that we can say this is unclear, so that the Gemara's contention that these two sources definitely parallel each other, that isn't necessarily the case. We continue in the Gemara. The less lay the Rav Achi bar Yoshia hodisnan. Now, we should look at the side of our Gemara under our Nosei heading, which introduces this section. We've written Hagemara dona b'sheila. The Gemara will be dealing with the question Echi tachein manda Omar de ein tzorech l'ksiva lishma b'parsha soita. That we see the Gemara specifies Rav Achi bar Yoshia that doesn't seem to require it being done lishma. Is it possible that someone would hold like that? Because what did Rav Achi bar Yoshia say, that the Megillah that's written for lady one could be used for lady number two? So it's not, if you're going to use it for lady number two, so it wasn't prepared for her, it wasn't written for her, it wasn't written lishma, and yet he says you could use it for lady number two. So can there be such an opinion? Bizman to get shenichtev v'shelo lishma posim, when we know that a divorce document that was written for lady number one cannot be used for lady number two, even if they happen to have the same name. And a divorce document, you write the names of the couples. Even if they have the same names, if it's written for couple number one, you cannot use it for the divorce of couple number two. So our Gemara is asking now, but let's lay at the bottom line, but let's lay the Rav Achi bar Yoshia Hodisnan. Does Rav Achi not hold from the following Tanaic source? Kosav get ligarishes ishto. A man wrote a divorce document with the intention of divorcing his own wife. V'nimlach umotzu ben iro. And the fellow who wrote the get, he changed his mind. He says, well, I don't want to divorce my wife. And someone of the, from the same town found him. V'yomar shimcho kishmi v'shem ishtako k'shem ishti. You and I have the same name, and our wives have the same name, and I, says person number two, want to divorce my wife, and we live in the same town, so that the town's name is the same. All the information that you wrote in the get that you intended to use would have the same information that would apply to me. Posul legaresh bo. It cannot be used. Why not? Because it wasn't done lishmo. It wasn't prepared for Mr. Number Two. So how can Rav Achi say in the case of the Sota document prepared for Lady One can be used for Lady Number Two? The Gemara answers, Pachi Hashta. How can you compare these cases, the case of the Sota to the case of divorce? Hosam, in the case of divorce, of get, the Pasuk says, V'kosav lo. Ksiv. The Pasuk, let's read that again. V'kosav lo ksiv. Bo'inon ksiva lishma. The Torah, by saying law, is telling me you have to write the divorce document for the specific woman, or having the specific woman in mind. Hacha, in the case of the Sota, the Osa law ksiv. It doesn't say the writing of the Sota document must be with a specific woman in mind. It says the procedure must be done with a specific woman in mind. Bo'inun asiya lishma. Asiya dida, the action that the word asiya connotes, mechika he. The asiya is the erasing. That is the stage after the Sota document has been written out. That document is then taken, and its contents, it's the writing on it, is then erased. You can imagine you scratching off the ink over the water that she eventually has to drink. It's that stage of the Sota ritual that must be done with a specific woman in mind. But as far as the writing, the initial writing of the Sota document, that does not have to be with a specific woman in mind, so that even if it was written for Lady Number One, the Sota document could be used for Lady Number Two, as opposed to the case of the get, where the Torah insists already at the writing stage it has to be done with a specific woman in mind. The Gemara now turns back to the distinction of Rebbe Meir. Turns back to focus on Rebbe Meir. On the side of our Gemara, under the no say, we simply written, Ein Bedoro K'Rebbe Meir. In his generation, there was no one like him. Omar Rav Acha Bar Chanina, Galui V'Yadua, Lifnei Mi Sh'omar V'Hoy Oilom. It is known before the one who said, and the world shall be, which is a nice way of saying it is known to the Almighty. She'ein Bedoro Sh'Rebbe Meir K'mosa, that in his generation, there was no one like Rebbe Meir. Umitnei ma'lo kavu halacha kamoso. Why is it then that we don't find the halacha being established when there would be controversy between Rebbe Meir and his colleagues? We don't find that the halacha follows the opinion of Rebbe Meir. Like, why not? If he's so great, no one like him, then why don't we follow him? Answer, shelo yachlu chaverov la'amoid al soif daito. Because his colleagues simply couldn't understand how he arrived at his conclusions. Shehu Omer al Tomei Tor Umar al Ponim al Tor Tomei Umar al Ponim. Rebbe Meir could very well rule regarding something that others perceived as being Tomei, he would say Tor and then prove his point. And he could say regarding something that others perceived as Tor, and he would rule Tomei and prove his point. And Mara Loponim is to bring evidence to his side. Rashi, at the top part of the page, the third line from the top, Al Sof Daito, Lo Yochlu Lahovin Be'ezeh Dvorov Nechoinim U'Be'ezeh Ein Dvorov Nechoinim. His colleagues, the rest of the rabbinic figures of his time, couldn't distinguish or determine which of his rulings were correct and which not. Shenoy Sein Das Miusha V'Hogun Al Ein Halacha K'Halacha. He would be able to show you something that is not acceptable as being acceptable. This is not what we're saying right now. We're basically translating the words. However, there is another level of depth that must be understood. We continue in the Gemara, Tana. We have diamonds that highlight two figures. And on the side, under our Mivneh heading, we have Lo Rebbe Meir and also Lo Nehuroi Shmo, two people that have names that are, we assume, are their names because that's how they're referred to, but it's not their real names. So the source says, Lo Rebbe Meir Shmo, Lo Rebbe Nehuroi Shmo. His name, the one that we referred to, Rebbe Meir, that's not his real name. The name that he received, let's say, as he was born, or his bris, was Rebbe Nehuroi. Lama Nikro Shmo Rebbe Meir. Why do we call him that? Shu Meir Einei Chachomim Ba'alocha, because he enlightens the eyes of the sages in the realm of Halacha. This is another person, as the note on the side of the Gemara indicates. V'lo Nehuroi Shmo, there was a person known as Nehuroi. That wasn't his name. Ela Rebbe Nechemya Shmo, the Amri La Rebbe Lozer Ben Aroch Shmo. The person that you find in the Shas referred to as Rebbe Nehuroi, that is not the name he received when he was born, but rather he was called Nechemya or Elozer. V'lomo Nikro Shmo Nehuroi. Why was Rebbe Nechemya, Rebbe Elozer Ben Aroch, referred to as the word as Nehuroi? Shemanhir Einei Chachomim Bahalacha. This word manhir is also associated with the realm of light, to enlighten his colleagues. Omar Rebbe. Rebbe is a generation later. In other words, if you've been paying attention to the names as we've gone through the last section of Gemara, we saw the generation of Rebbe Akiva and Rebbe Shmuel, and then we saw reference to Rebbe Meir, who was a student of theirs, and now we're going down another generation, Omar Rebbe, Hai de mechadadno mechavroi, that which I am sharper than my friends, de chazise le Rebbe Meir meachorei. I was in his Torah lectures, and I sat behind him. I didn't see his face, but I saw his back. The ilu chazise mikamei have mechad notfei, and had I seen him from in front, I would have been even sharper. Dechtiv v'hoyu einecho royos es morecho. The pasuk says, and your eyes should see your teacher. Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Talmid hoyo lo le Rabbi Meir v'sumchus shmo. Rabbi Meir, who we just described as being so sharp, head and shoulders above everybody else, he had a student named Sumchus. Shehoya oimer al kol dover v'dover shel tuma arboy mishmoyne tamei tuma. Any case or matter in the realm of tuma, he would give 48 different explanations. The al kol dover v'dover shel tara arboy mishmoyne tamei tara, and of anything that was ruled upon as being tohor, 48 explanations for that. Tana, Talmud Vosik Hoya B'Yavne, there was a student. Vosik would mean an old student, someone who was learning for a long time, that was in the city of Yavne. Yavne was a Torah center. Shemetayer es Hasheretz B'Meo V'Chamishim Teomim. He was able, through, we'll call this intellectual adroitness to render tohor a sheretz. A sheretz is a creature that is that when it's dead. There are 8 examples of a sheretz. There are many kinds of shrutzim in the world, but there are 8 kinds of shrutzim that the Torah declares that when they're dead, they communicate tumah. They are listed off by name in Sefer Vayikra. 8 different kinds of shrutzim. This Talmud Vosik, through his intellectual grace, was able to offer 150 reasons why it should be tahor. Now, if I am entitled to a, say, personal commentary, which is something that I generally don't do, but it appears to me that what we're seeing here is a type of, called confrontation, if you will, between something we call tradition and something, tradition is that which we receive from the time the Torah was given, generation after generation, and intellect, svora. And this is what we saw before, possibly, with regard to Rebbe Meir and his colleagues, where there seemed to be some type of confrontation between the colleagues of Rebbe Meir having a tradition. And Rebbe Meir would at times say things that countered their Kabbalah, their tradition, and he would even be able to prove it with, as the Gemara said, would be able to show that his position is the correct one. And then the issue came up, so that if he's able to prove it with his massive intellect, so that why don't we follow him? So the answer may rest in the fact that their tradition simply didn't conform to his conclusions. And as impressive as one's intellect may be, when it comes to a tradition you have, you can't abrogate that. The theme behind our comment right now is found also in Maseches Soita, in Maseches Yevomis, where Rabbi Akiva confronts the son of Rabbi Doisa ben Hurkanus, who had certain opinions regarding Yevomos related matters, and that son of Rabbi Doisa ben Hurkanus was so extraordinary that he was even beyond Rabbi Akiva in his intellectual powers. But Rabbi Akiva's response over there in Maseches Yevomos is, listen, in all due respect, I have a tradition, and I can't rule counter to my tradition. That is what might be taking place over here, where this Talmud Vosik was able to offer 150 reasons why a sheretz should be tohor, even though at the end of the day it's going to remain tomei. Omer Ravina. Now, Ravina, this is a much later time period. Ravina is the end of the Amoraic time period. We've been dealing till now with the Tanoim, even though they're a later generation Tanoim. We see Rebbe, Sumchus, these are the last of the Tanaic figures. Ravina is maybe 200 years after that, or more, the end of the Amoraic period. Well, he says, Ani Adun Vaterenu, I'll try my hand at this. I'll show you how a sheretz can be tahor with my intellectual suggestion. And he offers the following svora. Uma nochosh shemeinis umar betuma. Mind you, a snake, which is a venomous creature, we should point out that a dead snake is not a source of tuma. But he reasons as follows. Mind you, a snake which kills, and that which it kills, if it be people or animals, an animal carcass or a dead human corpse, is a source of tumah. So, and what causes that to be? What causes their death? The snake. So it is a tumah generator, if you will, and yet it, the snake itself, when it's dead, tohor, is not tomei. Sheretz. She ain maimis. A sheretz, something like, take a mouse, for example. A mouse might be one of those eight shrutzim listed in the Torah. It doesn't kill. Sheretz she'ein meimis umar betuma. Lo kol shekein. It certainly should not be the source of tuma. And yet it is. So what Ravino is trying to do is show that through his we'll call his intellect, one can in fact conclude like that Talmud Vosik did. Here the Gemara says Volohi. No, the Gemara seems to be saying that which Ravina is arguing doesn't even get off the ground. The snake causing death, Maisekoitz be'alma kovid. It's not that the snake is the source of the tuma. The snake, Maisekoitz literally means it's the action of a thorn is all it does. It bites, but to suggest that the snake itself is the source of the tuma, that is not the case. The snake is a vehicle that communicates the venom, which kills, but it's not the snake that is the source of the tuma. And that the Gemara is trying to say is the maisa koitz be'almo kovid. All it does is it pricks the victim. So what seems to be taking place here is that what Ravina thought is something that so to speak, anyone could do that, could use the intellect to show that the sheret should be tohor. Not so. It's not so easy to prove, and hence what was going on there with this Talmud Vosik in Yavne or Sumchus or what we saw earlier must have been something of an extraordinary intellectual nature. We continue in the Gemara with a long point. The topic on the side is, under the Nosei heading, Lama Halacha Kebeis Hillel. We've been mentioning different figures, and actually before we go on, just to review a major point that we in Gemara markings feel is very important and needs to be emphasized as often as possible, and that is how one should pursue his Torah learning career. And this last section of Gemara had highlighted Rebbe Meir. And our hope is that one appreciates Rebbe Meir as the Gemara itself said, was a towering intellect. He seemed to be head and shoulders above his generation. So that if one were to question his mental capacity as being somewhat limited, and that would be the explanation as to why he wasn't able to understand Rebbe Akiva initially, that would be a grave error. Rebbe Meir was a very capable individual. The only thing is that as capable as a person may be, if a person might turn out to be a lahavdil, a Nobel Prize winning physicist, he would never get there if he didn't go through basic arithmetic. One would has to know, again, lahavdil, how to add and subtract, multiply and divide before he can attempt to solve complicated mathematical calculations. That, of course, is obvious to all. The same thing with regard to the pursuit of Torah study. There is basic Torah literature, primary literature, that one must be familiar with before he can engage in the deep analysis, which the Rambam characterizes as the ability of ledamos milsa lemilsa, to be able to compare different topics and compare and contrast and prove your point in one topic of discussion from bringing source information from another topic of discussion. All of this kind of learning and the analysis of Torah is predicated on being expert in primary Torah sources, which includes literature like the Tanakh, especially the Chumash, the Mishnayos and their explanation, the simple explanation of Mishnayos, which is basically conveyed by the study of Gemara on a on a superficial level, and after that, once one has finished the Shas, as Rav Kahana and Daf Samach Gimel in Masechet Shabbos says, then one goes over all of it as much as he can with analysis. And of course, if you study the sources, you'll see that Rava in Masechet Brachos Davov says, Agra d'shmaitza svaravi, the ikur, the main source of reward for Torah study is the analysis of the Torah. But it's the same Rava in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Tes that says, first go through everything. First go through the Shas. And even if there are sections you don't fully understand, just keep going until you finish the Shas. And then go back and pursue the in-depth analysis, which is really the main Torah preoccupation. And the main point is keep things in perspective. Realize there is an order. Just like in any other area of intellectual pursuit, there is, before you can study something in an in-depth fashion, you have to amass some level of expertise in the primary sources. We continue in our Gemara with going now back a few generations to Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Why is it that we follow the rulings of Beis Hillel, especially when we talk about a machlokas Beis Hillel Beis Shammai? We follow Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai, the Gemara. And as we can see in our markings, we have a long point that we are about to start. The nun that's encircled to the side of the Gemara represents a nekuda, a point. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Shmuel, Shalosh Shonim Nechliku Beis Shammai uBeis Hillel. Over a course of 3 years, these two schools of Torah argued, Halalu Omrim Halach Kemosenu, Halalu Omrim Halach Kemosenu. Each school saying the halacha follows our approach. Yotze Baskel, the Omra, a heavenly voice emerged and came forth and announced, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel represent the words of the Almighty. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim hein v'halocha ke'Beis Hillel. And the halocha shall follow Beis Hillel. That's the ruling of the heavenly voice. The Gemara asks, V'chime achar she'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Once you've established that both represent the words of the Almighty, mitnei ma zochu Beis Hillel likboya halacha kemoison. So then, what merit did Beis Hillel have that the halacha is established like them? Answer: mitnei shenoichin ve'aluvin hoyu. Their personality characteristics were one of nochin. Nochin are people that are easy, pleasant to get along with. Aluvin, Rashi says on this, savlonim, patience. Sevel is the ability to bear something. So they had patience. In other contexts, the word aluvin can mean someone who bears his indignation. In other words, once if he's insulted, he knows how to bear the insult. So that was what characterized. They were very pleasant people. The shoinin divrayim, the divrei Beis Shammai. When Beis Hillel would make a point, they would state not only their own opinion, but they would state the opinion of their opponent. V'lo oid ala shematimim divrei Beis Shammai l'divrayim. They would even present their opponent's opinion first before presenting their own. Ke'oisa sheshoninu, as is illustrated in the following Tanaic source. This source deals with halachas of a sukkah. It says, Mishoy roshev ruba b'sukkah u'shulchanu b'socha bayis. One who is positioned with his body, and with most of his body, his head and most of his body in the sukkah, under the schach. But the table from which he's eating is inside his house. The house being a place that one should not eat during the holiday of Sukkot. So you can see that a person had built his sukkah up alongside his house. the person is sitting under the schach branches, and the table from which he's eating is in his house. Shammai poislin beis hillel machshirim. Shammai says it's unfit, beis hillel says it's okay. Amru beis hillel lebeis Shammai. Lo kacho yamaisa, beis hillel says to beis Shammai, was not the following the case? Shehochu ziknei beis Shammai v'ziknei beis hillel levakiris Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranis. Now we've dashed underline ziknei beis Shammai. It means that here you have beis hillel speaking, and these are students or the younger scholars of this school called beis hillel is presenting a story, an incident where their masters, their sages, their predecessors had visited Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranis. Now, in telling this story, the speaker here is Beis Hillel. In telling the story, who do they mention first? They mention the elders of Beis Shammai, in other words, the opposing school. They mention those elders in the story first. That's why we dashed underline Ziknei Beis Shammai and Ziknei Beis Hillel. They went to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranis, Umatsu Yoshev Roshe Rubasukha Vishukhan Vishukhabayas. And they saw that Rabbi Yochanan was sitting in the way we, Beis Hillel, sifted, as being kosher. Amru Lohan Beis Shammai. So in that story, Beis Shammai responds to Beis Hillel and says, Misham Raya, are you trying to prove your point from that story? Afhein Amru Lo Im Keno Yisanoeg Lo Kiyamta Mitzvah Sukha Miyomecha. In that very story, they told him, the sages that were visiting Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranis told him, if this is how you have practiced your sukkah mitzvah, you haven't fulfilled sukkah ever. We don't have to dwell on the laws of sukkah. That, of course, is dealt with in Maseches Sukkah in much greater length. However, what we see from here, and we have triangles that appear and under our Mivneh heading on the side, the triangle highlights the word kol and follows with a statement. Sidra shel hadrachos kedei latzliach. We'll see here a series of suggestions of how to be successful. So this shows us, l'lam d'choshikol amashbil atzmo, l'amdecho meaning that which we paskin like Beis Hillel, we can extract from that the following, that kol hamashpil atzmo gosh brocha mabiyu, he who lowers himself, who gives preeminence to others, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, will raise such a person. V'chol ha-magbiya atzma HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpilo. And to the contrary, anyone who imposes themselves, magbiya is literally raises himself over others, the Almighty will lower him. Kol ha-machazir al ha-gdulo, gdulo b'irachas mimenu. Anyone who seeks out loftiness, pride, gdula is greatness, not of course in a spiritual nature, but in greatness in the public eye. So gdula borachas mimenu, the gdula, the honor will actually run away from the honor seeker. The chola boreach min gdula, he who runs away from the greatness, one who is of a humble nature, gdula mechazeres acharov, greatness will seek him out. Let's take a look at Rashi to explain. Dochek means it's one who pushes or presses, es hasha, presses against time. That's a literal translation, but Rashi explains halfway down the page, more or less, Hadochek es hasha misyage lahashiru lizgadel, one who exerts efforts, he strains himself to become wealthy and big. The roya shenu matzliach, and he sees he's not having success. The afal became choyzer v'hoylich lemer chokim umachnis atzmo legvoyos, and nevertheless, after he makes efforts more and more and more, and he sees he's not having success, and he continues traveling great distances and trying to push himself into gvoyos, mean high things. Someone like that is making a mistake. He will, the more he presses, so to speak, to become rich, and of course, seeing that he is not being successful, he is just going to end up continuing in that way. However, anyone who takes the cue, so to speak, he sees that now is not the time, I'm going to roll back a little bit. And of course, as advocates of Torah study, the hope would be someone like that would roll back from his attempts to become rich and invest his time in Torah study and the performance of acts of loving kindness, of good deeds. Someone like that, one who takes the cue, so to speak, his time will come. The time stands for him. Literally, Rashi says, his time of success will come. In other words, a person has to know how to take the cues from life. And as believing Jews, these cues are not something of a chance nature. These are signs from heaven that now is not the time. So, of course, a person is entitled to and maybe ought to make some efforts in pursuit of his different goals. But if he sees that he is meeting with failure, he should realize that this is a sign not to keep pressing and have faith, and the good times will come, so to speak. Tanu Rabbanan, Shtei Shanu Mechtzo Nechlu Beisham Beis Hillel. Over the course of 2.5 years, there was a controversy, an argument between these two schools. Halolu Omrim Noach Lo Lodom Shelo Nivra Yosem Mishinivra. It would have been better for a person not to have been born or not to have been created than, in fact, he is created. After all, when a person, after a person, his soul comes down into this world in the form of a living person, it goes through life, encounters all kinds of challenges and sins and tests. Had he not been born, so his soul would have remained in the realm of the pure, unadulterated. So they're arguing it would have been better for him not to have been born. No, it's better for a person to have been born than not to have been born. After one is born, so of course he has the option of accumulating more and more merit through the performance of mitzvahs. Nimnu v'gomru, noach lo l'odom shelo nivro. Yosem Yeshivra, they eventually came to a conclusion. They took a vote and they concluded that it would have been better for the person not to have been created than his being created. Achshav Shenivra, but now that a person is created, is born, Yefash Fesh Bemaisov, V'amri Lo Yemashmesh Bemaisov. So we have two expressions here, and we have to explain them. The Rashi says on Yefashvesh Maisov, She'osukfar, Yefashvesh literally is to check out, to investigate Maisov that he's already done. He's checked out his actions to investigate that which he's already done. V'yivdok Averos Shebiyodo V'yisvadi V'yoshuv. And he should check out to see if he has sinned and then confess his sins and accept upon himself not to do them anymore. Amri law, the second approach we saw in the Gemara was Yemashmesh b'maisav. So Rashi says on this, Yemashmesh b'maisav kigoni bo mitzvah liyodo, Yechashev efsid mitzvah keneged schora, V'lo yoniach milasosa b'shvil ahefsid. A person should make a calculation. A mitzvah opportunity comes up. A person should calculate and reach the conclusion that it's worth doing the mitzvah, even though it might appear that it's coming at the expense of some type of other profit. Don't pass up on the mitzvah opportunity. The reward will eventually come. V'imbosel yodo avera, and if temptation comes your way, Yichashiv schoro shemistakir bo achshav kenegative seva osili pora mimeno. A person should make the calculation of the pleasure he may derive right now in committing this act of sin. True, there might be an immediate pleasure from that. However, there is payment, punishment that a person will have to make, will have to pay for, or undergo punishment in the future. And the hope is a person will come to the conclusion that the immediate pleasure is not worth the great pain that one will have to experience later. There's another approach to these two expressions, Yefashish Maisav and Amloi Mashmish Maisav. There's a little star drawing your attention to the text under the Gemara text. And this is from the Oruch. And he says, Pirush Yemashmesh, that expression, which was the second expression in the Gemara, was Meikora. A person should take evasive measures. She Zohir Mi Achto, preempt the sin by not coming to a situation of sinning. Oim Chota, but if a person did sin, Yefashvesh Maisov Yachzer B'tshuva. He should, this Yefashvesh is similar to that which Rashi said. The Mishnah. At this point, we have a topic heading. Prote, on the side under the Nosei heading, Prote Halochus Bukuro Sh'al Pesach HaMavui. We're going to get into details concerning the crossbeam that is placed over the entrance of a of an alleyway that enables one to carry in it on Shabbos. There are diagrams that accompany this Mishnah, so we should have available the Pirush Chai, page 28, diagram 171, you'll find at the top of the page. Hakoro She'omru, the Korah that we've spoken about, that was mentioned at the very beginning, that's placed over the entrance of a Mavui, Ruchovo Kedei L'Kabel Oriach. It must be wide enough that you would be able to place an Oriach on top of this Korah. The Korah is the beam, and Oriach is a type of brick. The Oriach, the brick had a standard size. The Oriach equals Chatzi Levena Shel Shloisha Tochen. There was another type of brick that was called a Levena, and it had a given standard size of 3 handbreadths. The Oriach is therefore half, which is 1.5 handbreadths. So the Korah must be able to hold an Oriach. Daya LeKorah Shtei Rechova Tefach Kidei LeKabel Oriach LeRachbo. It is therefore enough that the Korah be 1 tefach wide in order to support upon it an Oriach in its width. The width of the Oriach, we said, was 1.5 tefachim. The Gemara will deal with this seeming difficulty that if you're telling me the Oriach is 1.5 tefachim, so wouldn't you expect the Korah to be 1.5 tefachim as well? And yet the Mishnah is saying that it's enough that the Korah be 1 tefach wide. The Mishnah continues, Rechovo kedei l'kabel oriach, ubrio kedei l'kabel oriach. The Tanakhama, the first opinion, says, not only must it be wide enough to hold the oriach, but it also has to physically be strong enough to support an oriach. Oriach being a brick of having a certain amount of weight to it, so the Korah must be bria, strong enough to hold such a brick. Rav Yehuda Omer, Rechov Afopi She'ein Bria. Rav Yehuda is a second opinion who says the width must be there. However, the strength need not be there. So you can have a Korah made of some very weak material, and it's still kosher. Hoysa shel kash v'shel konim. This is Rav Yehuda speaking. If the korah was made of kash, straw, konim, reeds, royin oysa ki'ilu hi shel mateches. You would imagine in your mind's eye as if the korah was made of iron. So that this is consistent with what Rav Yehuda just said. That is, that even if it's, as long as it has the right dimension, if it's weak material, it's still kosher. Because in your mind's eye, you're able to look at it as if it's strong. Picture 173. You see that, again, on page 28. Akuma. This is a korah, but it's bent. Or it's not a straight, horizontal situation. And in your mind's eye, can see it as if it's straight. Agula. 172, illustration 172 shows you what is meant by agula. So if the if it's a round rod type, a rod shaped beam, you see it as if it's merubas, because we're dealing with a dimension of a description of a korah that can hold a flat brick. So if the korah were let's say rod circular shaped, so it wouldn't support the brick wouldn't be supported on that. So the Mishnah is telling me it doesn't matter that it's round shaped. We're looking at potential. We see it as if it would be merubas, and an important statistic for that is kol sheyesh bekeifo shlosha tefachim. Anything that has a circumference, hekeifo is a measure of circumference of three tefachim. Yesh bo rochav tefach, then it will have a width. In the case of a circle, it would be its diameter would be one tefach. So that the rod, if it has a circumference of three tefachim, it will be kosher as a korah because it has within it a width of a tefach, which is the dimension needed for a korah. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.